In the musical The Greatest Showman, Phineas T. Barnum had vision and ambition, and eventually, through grit and determination, is propelled to success. He gets enamored along the way by the fame, and his entrance into upper society sidetracks him. But he eventually comes back to his people and his family, and he finds his true purpose. The real P.T. Barnum was not quite so straightforward. Mara Einstein wrote a book titled Hoodwinked and used P.T. Barnum as a prime example. She said in a blog post, "He was considered the godfather of PR and is arguably the most famous huckster of all time. While known for the circus that bears his name, Barnum's real talent was in flim flam, promoting hoaxes and sideshows." The movie touches on this in a lighthearted and clearly romanticized way. My observations are purely from the music, the characters, and the themes of the screenplay. Just remember that. Okay. The song, This Is Me, as I mentioned in the prelude, and was sung so powerfully for us by Leia, is what originally led me to choose the show. The bearded lady, Letty Lutz, who Barnum discovered singing in a laundry, hiding behind hanging sheets, found, through Phineas's encouragement and urging, her courage and her voice and her purpose. Later, when Phineas, who had now been accepted into upper society, tried to exclude his troop of misfits, is confronted with them, all singing, "I'm not scared to be seen, I make no apologies, this is me." The idea of finding ourselves, our true selves, not letting the world break us down, not being scared to be seen, making no apologies, finding our purpose, and being able to say, this is me, out loud, is everyone's journey. Not all of us will want to shout it from the stage. Most of us enjoy our quiet lives, but the movie, and hopefully this sermon, will bring out the common human dilemma of discovering who we are and the journey to our true selves. Phineas T. Barnum's dream was part desire to bring entertainment to the masses and part ambition to be and have more than he ever had. Coming from humble beginnings, but getting glimpses into the lives of the wealthy, he believed that was the goal. He was an entertainer and desired the spotlight, but it also gave him great pleasure to make other people happy, especially his wife, Charity, who was his rock and his inspiration. After marrying and settling into a humble life, he is laid off from the stable and predictable clerk position and finally feels free to pursue his dreams, no matter the cost and no matter the means. He eventually brings together a group of performers and starts the circus. The troupe Barnum recruits has either a remarkable skill, such as the trapeze artist and flamethrowers, or a physical oddity, such as extreme height, or dwarfism, or the bearded lady and co-joined twins. These were people on the fringes of society in the late 19th century, and they had to hide in order to avoid ridicule and social separation. Or I guess they were socially separated. But to his credit, at least in the movie, he gave confidence to those who had previously lived hidden lives. He championed their differences and helped them find a way to be themselves, though sometimes in an exaggerated way, and to step out of the shadows and into the world with their talents. "No one ever made a difference in this world by being like everyone else," Barnum said. "Listen to me, listen. It doesn't matter where you're from anymore. What matters is where you're going. You can choose who you want to be. All of us can, don't you see?" Overcoming shame is one of the themes of the movie, and with a little help from Phineas Barnum and his outrageous vision, each person in each act learned that their uniqueness was a gift. They learned there was a place for them. But can we just choose who we want to be? We're born unique individuals, and through our upbringing and interaction with family and society, sometimes end up hiding parts of ourselves in order to conform or protect ourselves from the world around us. We, perhaps unconsciously or sometimes quite consciously, choose who we are going to be. The interplay between our DNA, our environment, and our culture is complex. And for those in the LGBTQ community, hiding such an essential part of who you are may have been part of your story, and it must have been excruciating. I acknowledge you and your identity, and hope that society continues to evolve to accept you completely. We all may have parts of ourselves that we found we had to hide or push down to adapt to our surroundings and fit in or be accepted. It starts in our family, then as we enter school. Sorry. This happens. It starts in our family, then as we enter school and the wider world, there's another pressure to conform and behave in certain ways, to belong. Some call this our false self, or our egoic self, or simply our personality. Personality or persona, the word comes from a Greek word meaning mask. It's what we put on as we enter the world. And what P.T. Barnum encouraged when he said you can be whoever you want to be. Have you seen the meme, "Can you remember who you were before the world told you who you should be?" This is what I'm talking about. And P.T. Barnum helped to a certain point, and then maybe went too far. I recently saw a clip of Pamela Anderson talking about going makeup-free after years as a model and actress who had to maintain a certain sex appeal. She said on Drew Barrymore's show that she wanted to find out who I was again. I wanted to remember who I was. After years of playing characters, she asked, "Who am I?" The makeup was simply a metaphor for the mask she had to wear for years to maintain an image. I'm not trying to take away from the richness of performance and what that adds to our lives, or even to diss makeup. Broadway shows, movies, and the gifted actors that portray many varied characters give us a window into our soul. As we've seen all summer, they provide metaphors for the deeper truths of life. And we're all performers in some way or another. The world is our stage, and to find true meaning and purpose, we try on different masks. But where do these masks come from? Why do we feel the need to put them on in the first place? I remember being in the car with my parents, and the traffic was horrible. I was about 7 years old. I think it was during the energy crisis when people were only allowed to fill up their gas tanks like once every other day. I was in the back of the car and I popped up and asked, "Why are we stopped?" My father, annoyed with sarcasm, said, "Because the car in front of us stopped." That was not my real question. I wanted to know why there was so much traffic. But my question had been misunderstood and I felt embarrassed for even asking. I stopped asking questions after that. I was afraid they were stupid. When I was 10, I got my ears pierced for my birthday. I can't remember how it came up, but one of my fifth grade teachers, a man, noticed and commented that women have enough holes in their heads. Why get more? Harsh, right? I was like, what do you do with that as a 10-year-old? Well, you don't ask questions. Women are stupid. I slid into the shadow and stopped asking questions and lost a little of my curiosity. I don't share those examples as an indictment on my upbringing. Despite the tears, I really am past that. But to recognize how my upbringing and the culture influenced me in a way that pushed me to try to conform and act differently. On a more positive note, I remember my sixth grade teacher, Mrs. McDonald, who encouraged creativity and where I earned an A for a speech I gave. She let me have a voice. And the neighbor down the street who always welcomed me into her home and family and took time to really see me. One of the things I've observed and loved about UUCL is the way children are encouraged to explore and be who they are. No parent is perfect, but that freedom here is a gift. Please continue to allow them to explore and ask questions and learn from them. They have a wisdom that has not yet been tainted by the world. Do you remember the first time you were misunderstood, corrected, or disciplined for something you said or did and could not understand why? Moving forward, did you try to not do or say that again? Did shame move you to act differently? Or maybe you found that when you performed a certain way, you received more attention, accolades, and love. Hence, the good person is born, the one who feels they must achieve to be loved. Richard Rohr, a Franciscan priest, in his book, Immortal Diamond, explains the true and false self this way. He is of the belief we are spirit and that we live eternally, but whether or not you believe that, I think we can benefit from his thoughts. Your true self is that part of you that is going to live forever and sees truthfully. It is divine breath passing through you. Your false self is that part of you that is constantly changing and will eventually die. It is in the world of passing forms and looks out with itself as the central reference point, which is never true. Your false self is not bad or wrong, it's just mortal. It's relative and not absolute. Your false self is your necessary warm-up act, the ego part of you that establishes your separate identity, especially in the first half of life. Basically, it is your incomplete self trying to pass for your whole self. We fall in love with the part so much that we deny the whole. Such love gets us started until we eventually realize that love lasts forever and is the one thing we can forever count on and forever are. About 11 years ago, when my faith started unraveling and I started questioning everything I previously believed, I had to confront myself and the lens through which I saw the world. I became obsessed with the idea of calling or vocation and what I might be uniquely equipped for. My children were getting older, my faith was changing, and I felt like I did not know what I was supposed to do or who I was. Eventually, after reading lots of books, I discovered the Enneagram. It's a tool used for self-discovery. Maybe you've heard about it. If you talk to me for any length of time, you have heard about it. I found a new obsession, and this tool, and eventually astrology too, which I love to talk about, have been systems I've used to delve deeper into who I am and to get in touch with my true self or higher self and my own intuition. The wonderful byproduct for me of studying the Enneagram and astrology is that I've learned so much about others too. Not to put people in a box, but to see and hear others with more love, understanding, and compassion. In a book titled The Road Back to You, about the Enneagram, Thomas Merton is quoted, "The beginning of love is the will to let those who love be perfectly themselves. The resolution not to twist them to fit our own image. If in loving them, we do not love what they are, but only their potential likeness to ourselves, then we do not love them. We only love the reflection of ourselves we find in them." You don't have to study the Enneagram or astrology to find yourself or understand others, but you do need to be curious and you need to keep love at the center. So what does this have to do with The Greatest Showman? I don't know, but I just wanted to talk about that. But in the end of the movie, Phineas T. Barnum finds the road back to himself. He was enamored by the false self he created. He loved the attention and the spotlight and sacrificed his family and his original troupe for more status and fame. His circus burns down, his house is foreclosed on, his family leaves him. I guess those are spoiler alerts if you haven't seen it. And he comes to realize his folly and comes back to his wife and his family and his original community of misfits. He was refined by the fire of his experience, both figuratively and literally, and eventually came back home again to his true self and his true love. Not all of us create a false self so dramatic as P.T. Barnum's, but most of us have our masks. As we continue to choose love and listen closely to our own intuition, those masks start to fall away and we come home to our true selves.